Hello and welcome to Ask Margot Today. It's great to be here with you, and we're going to cover some interesting questions which have popped up since our last episode. I'm Margot de Coatsworth, and on this show we endeavour to answer the sticky questions of life, often looking deeper than the surface solutions that we're used to. My field is in the mind-body connection and discovering what the meaning is behind the things that show up in our body, particularly relating to our health. I'm interested in the metaphysical realm, which is the branch of philosophy that deals with existence, being, and related concepts like ontology, modality, identity, and free will. Ontology is the philosophy or the philosophical study of being. So interesting. To me, we are wired to ask why. We are wired to question the meaning of things, the purpose of things, where they came from, where they're going, why they're here, why we're involved with them, and how they work. I do think we often shut all that down because we don't know how to find the answers to the things that we have these endless questions about. We see ourselves really as subject to the random stuff of life, or what we perceive as random. My pursuit over the last decades has been to discover whether or not life is random. And my discovery is that it is not, and that nothing, in fact, is random. It's all cause and effect. And it's possible for us to get to the bottom of things, to find out why they're here, how they work, what their purpose is, and what our part is in this whole, what I call, dance of life. If we accept things as being random and just take on whatever shows up, whatever's dished out to us in a bit of a crapshoot in life, then we have no control, we have no power, and we have no ability to shift things and to focus on the things we like and pull those into our reality and into our lives. If we have knowledge of how things work, we also have the knowledge to see how we can shut down the things we don't like and don't want. There's a quote I truly love, and I've got it written on the wall in my hallway. It's by Carl Jung. He says, "Until we make the unconscious conscious, it will direct our lives and we will call it fate." I find that so profound. We have the ability to consciously choose and to consciously direct our lives. Sometimes I call it, you are the genie. Because we need to realize that if there's any power anywhere, it lies within us, and we're the ones who need to find it and work out how to use it for our own benefit and the ripple effect of that, which is for the benefit of everybody. So that's my premise for this show, Ask Margot. Not just to give you practical how-to, which is really important because we have to know what the next step is when we're trying to address something or solve something. We have to know what we can actually do, but going deeper than that, to reset our thinking, to reassess what we've thought before, and to ask ourselves, is there a better, smarter way that gives us what we want and doesn't make us subject to what we've thought was random? The stuff of life, you know, the things we just have to accept or we've thought we had to accept. So I guess my challenge is, I don't think we have to. So let's find out how to go about that so that we're living the lives we choose and not living our lives by default. One of my strong platforms, if you like, is that we have a right to be well, that our default place should be perfect health. And I know that makes people cross, especially if they're not well. And actually, recently, I have not been well, which has been sort of shocking for me, because it's been years since I've been to the doctor. And I still haven't been, but I have had things go wrong. And I think, what is this all about? because my stand for perfect health is so absolute. I'm so sure we're designed for that and that we can achieve it by our expectations, by the way we speak to and about our body, and by the way we take charge of that responsibility. So recently, when I got sick, I thought, I have to find out what's going on here. And I did some deeper investigation, coming back to the concept of the metaphysical reason for things. What could the reason be? Because often, when something like that shows up, I say to myself or others, let's see what the body might be trying to say. Is it saying, I don't want any more of something, or I need more of something, or I need you to stop that? If we saw our body as an expression of what the higher, greater part of us wanted us to know, wouldn't that be interesting? So if you're not well today, ask yourself, what might I, the big me, be trying to say to me that's expressing itself in this way? I have a number of books that help identify the causes of various things in different parts of our body, and I'll often look those up to see what something may be about. You know, for example, lower back pain or headaches or whatever it is, and what the root cause might be. The advice these books give is not always necessarily right for that particular situation or person, but people always recognize it when it is. And sometimes if I have someone who says, I've got this, what do you think it's about? I'll look it up and send it to them and say, you will know if there's anything in this that resonates with you. So I wanted to tell you that what my investigation about this kind of deep sort of cough that I've had was about. And also numbers of people around me have had it. What that meaning might be. I'm putting it out there for people to observe and to see how it's possible for our emotional state and our mind that can use our body to speak to us, how it can use our body to try and get a message through. For me, it's like putting on the brakes. The universe is saying to me, stop and look at this. You need to reassess. I would say the last few times when I have not felt well, that's been the case. It's kind of come to a screeching halt and made me look at my life and the direction I was going in. So it's required a realignment or a shift. How do I say to people, be well if I'm not well? That was a big question for me. But I realize it's not about me. It's about whether the way to be well is true or not. And it is. So I'm not apart from this looking on from the outside. I'm within it like everybody. I don't think there would be a person in the world who has never had some kind of health issue, big or small, to deal with, and who's never been ill, never had a headache, never had a cold. So it's important for me not to say I'm setting myself apart or above, even though I can say I haven't been to a doctor for years. We're all in the same boat, all aspiring to great health, all actually trying to take some of the pressure off doctors in the world who are doing such an amazing job and are under so much pressure. Wouldn't it be cool if we could actually take up some of that responsibility ourselves? Because we can, and because we can deal with a whole lot more than we have realized or been told we could in terms of achieving and maintaining our health. Anyway, onto this question that came up with someone who had had the same cough as me. I have a persistent phlegmy cough that sometimes makes me feel like I'm going to be sick. I haven't had a cold or flu. What could this mean on an emotional level, Margot? When a symptom is persistent and has no obvious physical trigger, it's often helpful to look at what the body's trying to reject or express. A phlegmy cough tells us that something has been retained. The gagging or nausea tells us the system has reached a point of refusal. Oh, I think this is fascinating. In simple terms, the body is saying, I can no longer stomach this. It isn't about a passing irritation. It's about something that has been taken in, tolerated, or endured for too long. The lungs relate to what we are living with, the atmosphere of our life. The throat relates to what we have swallowed, what we've agreed to, accepted, or not stopped at the boundary. And nausea is the clearest biological signal of rejection. So when all three are involved, the message is not subtle. It suggests there is something in your life, a situation, a dynamic, a responsibility, or even an internal story that your system no longer agrees to carry. Often this happens when consciously we already know something doesn't fit, but we're still being polite about it internally, still managing it, still accommodating it. The body escalates when tolerance becomes self-betrayal. This kind of cough doesn't resolve through effort or suppression. It resolves through withdrawn consent. That might mean acknowledging, I'm no longer available for this, or this doesn't belong in my life or in me anymore. When that permission is given, the body no longer needs to enforce the boundary on your behalf. This is not a symptom of weakness. It's a way to clarity. I find that fascinating. So if you have something that's lingering and sticking around in your life and body like this, and it does seem that half the world is coughing sometimes, ask yourself, is there something I'm not addressing that I need to deal with? I think sometimes we think our bodies run their own course and do their own thing, and we're just behind catching up. But what if they are at the end of everything? What if they're at the end of our thought process, our emotional process, and our subconscious programming? That's the expression that shows up in our body. It's trying to tell us something. I find it exciting, really, because it means we have the ability to change things, to take back control. And I love that. We are meant to be the boss of us. On to our next question. Margot, I'm hopeless at remembering things, names especially. I've always said I just have a bad memory. Is that really true? We've talked about memory quite a bit. It does seem to be an ongoing subject. Well, the first thing I'm going to say is never ever say you are hopeless. It's a wicked thing to say about yourself, and no good will come of it. It's also a lie of the worst kind. You are not hopeless. Back to the question. Most people do not have a bad memory. They have a bad system of recall. Talking to myself here as well. And those two things are not the same. Let's start with something familiar. We all know how Mary had a little ... ends. And we haven't practiced that one for years. So clearly our brains can remember when they choose to. Which tells us something important. Memory isn't about capacity, it's about attention and intention. People often say, I'm terrible with names. But think about that for a moment. You can remember that the sky is blue. You can remember that the grass is green. You can remember a phone number, a PIN, a song lyric. We know lots and lots of songs. They're just sitting in our memory. Or a childhood rhyme, Mary Had a Little Lamb. And yet when someone says, hi, I'm Tom, suddenly we act as if those three little letters are impossibly difficult. Well, it doesn't make any sense. The real reason people don't remember names is simple. They weren't paying attention. They weren't really listening. Most people ask, what's your name? Not because they care, but because they're waiting for their turn to speak. Not always, but often. Their attention is already on what they want to say next. The name passes straight through the system without ever being registered. Now here's a little shift that changes everything. If instead of moving on immediately, you stay with the name, just briefly, and you turn it into an event, something memorable, and the brain will remember an event. For example, your name is Stephanie. You might say, how do you spell that? I don't know, with the traditional spelling? Are you named after someone? What does it mean? I like that one. Princess with a crown, apparently. Now, notice what's happened. Stephanie is no longer just a sound. She's a story, a meaning, an image, a princess with a crown. At that point, you don't have to try and remember her name. You can't forget it because the brain remembers conversations and not labels. This is how memory actually works. Neuroscience shows that the hippocampus, the part of the brain involved in memory, strengthens when information is emotionally or socially contextualized, meaning it locks the memory in place. So when people say, I have a bad memory, what they're really saying is, I haven't been intentionally using it. And that's good news because memory isn't lost, it's trainable. The moment you decide that what someone is saying matters, that they matter, and they have a story, you start to remember. Asking people to spell their name might be a bit light, but if you ask people what their name means, that's interesting, not just to you, but to them as well. They may not know, but it's a route to a conversation that paints a picture about that person that you will likely not forget. If all else fails, I always say it's fun to say to yourself, if I had $1 million, I'd give it to myself if I remembered your name. And you will most certainly pay attention to the name in question. Okay, on to our next question, which I think personally is a doozy. And I feel like it should be the question for this particular episode. So it's for anybody who's in a partnership, a romantic one, with anyone else. If you're married, if you're a team of two, a couple, if you're contemplating that, or if you've been in such a relationship for a long time, or maybe you're having difficulty, take this one on board because I think it says it all. We often have much to say about relationships. They seem so complex and they seem so individually different. But I've been listening to a chap who I thought told me this, or I heard this from, but then someone else last night when I was talking about this said I got it from a movie. Anyway, doesn't matter where it came from, I want to share it with you. It was, how do you live happily, successfully with your other person? And this is quite traditional. It is geared towards men, and I'm sure it relates the other way around as well. So, if you hear it, you'll recognize if it resonates with you, because I think we all have a truth meter and we know when something is right. This chap said, what you do is say to your lady, your partner, your wife, you ask them what they want. That's number one. Number two, you listen. You might think that's a given, but it isn't always. So you ask, and then you listen to what they want, and then you dedicate yourself to making that thing so. Making that desire, that wish, that need come true. That's it. That's all you have to do. That's your part in finding a relationship that you can live happily ever after within. I use wife as a term, but you know, this is what a husband does for a wife. It's worth thinking about. It's worth seeing it in action, trying it, because we all just want to be seen and heard. There isn't anybody on the planet who doesn't simply want to be seen and heard. You're taking the time and then you're doing the thing they want, focusing on them. You're dedicating yourself to doing whatever you can to make that thing, the need, the desire, that's going to make them happy, come to fruition. There isn't any more you can do than that, and that's enough. I'd be happy to have feedback on that one, but I think it's probably the single answer to a happy ever after relationship. Ask, listen, and make it happen. Well, our last question for today. Margot, I notice a lot of adults seem very reactive. They explode, lash out, and take offense instantly or say things that they later regret. What's that all about? I think it comes down to one thing, and it's state management. And that's one of the most important skills a human being can learn and own. There are two broad ways people move through life. One is reactive. The other is responsive, or more accurately, responsible, meaning able to respond. Reactive people operate from impulse. Something happens and they fire back immediately, emotionally, verbally, and sometimes physically. There's no pause, there's no check, no consideration, no deliberate choosing of what the next step will be. No considered self-management. Responsible people, i.e. able to respond, on the other hand, have learned how to manage their internal state. They are able to respond intentionally. They experience the same emotions, frustration, anger, disappointment, but they don't let those emotions drive their behavior. That's the key. They insert a moment of awareness between stimulus and response. That moment is everything. From a neurological point of view, that's the difference between the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex. The amygdala is fast, emotional, and primitive. It reacts. The prefrontal cortex is slower, thoughtful, and adult. It considers consequences. When someone reacts immediately, they're quite literally operating from a child brain. We've all seen that. When someone pauses and chooses their response, they're operating from an adult one. And we hope every parent has learnt how to do that. Here's the uncomfortable truth. Many adults have never learnt this skill. They still act like a child would act. They react. They've grown up physically, but not emotionally. So when they feel threatened, criticised, uncomfortable, they revert to childhood behaviour. Sulking, shouting, blaming, withdrawing, deflecting, or attacking. And we may have all seen that. Not because they're bad people, but because they lack self-management. That's why parenting matters so much. One of the primary jobs of a parent is to teach a child how to manage their own state. We don't allow toddlers to bite, hit, or scream because that's how they feel. We teach them to stop, to use words, to consider the consequences, and to regulate themselves. But if a parent hasn't learned self-regulation themselves, how can they teach it to their children? You can't model what you don't have. So we end up with generations of adults who are never taught that feelings are not instructions, that emotion does not equal entitlement, that just because you feel something strongly does not mean you get to act it out. Self-management is the ability to say, I feel this, but I choose what I do next. It's the foundation of maturity. It's the foundation of healthy relationships. And it's the foundation of leadership in families, in workplaces, and in society. People who manage their state don't avoid emotion. They don't suppress it. They simply refuse to outsource their behaviour to it. They understand that being an adult means taking responsibility not just for their actions, but for their reactions. They understand that self-control is not repression. It's a kind of freedom. Because the moment you can choose your response, you're no longer hostage to your circumstances. You're in charge of your interface with the world. And that's exactly what we're meant to teach our children. Not obedience, not compliance, but self-governance. The ability to stop, think, and choose. If we want calmer homes, healthier relationships, and more capable adults, we must stop excusing reactivity and start valuing responsibility. The ability to respond deliberately. Okay, I know that these life principles can seem a bit out there sometimes, but if you pick one and focus on it, you will find that they do work. If you have any questions you wish to send to us, please do so to me at margounlimited.com, Margo with a T, under the contact tab, or of course you can send them to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz. We love to hear from you. If anybody has a question they would like me to seek an answer from the universe about, then please send that to me. That's an open invitation. Just write to me and say, here's my question. What does the universe have to say about that? And we'll cover it in the next episode. Over the last year, we've been working on establishing an app where people are able to go in and ask their own questions and allow the universe to guide them to the answer it would have for them. This app is getting daily closer to completion. It's with Apple at the moment for review, so I'll keep you posted on that one when they come back to me and say, you've done everything, ticked all the boxes, and you're good to go. Then, if you wish, you can go on and take advantage of 3 free days of using it just to see how amazing it is to be able to ask a question of the universe and get an answer. Thank you, everyone, for being with me today, and I look forward to seeing you next time. Here to finish, as usual, is today's message from the Word. It's a great one, I think, to begin the year with. Never allow yourself to think that I would give you less than you want for yourself. Why would you do that? Why would I? I am your greatest benefactor. I am the one who bestows, who showers abundance, who gives unstintingly. Never forget that, and never expect anything less. I am a God of more. Thank you, and see you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.